This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this is GG Well Played, BFM's video game show. In this episode, we'll be joined by Sophie Azlan, a person who's no stranger to the local gaming industry, with a very diverse CV that includes being in the industry as part of various development teams to now being a lecturer that teaches game development at the School of Computing and Creative Media, UOW Malaysia. We're going to get her perspectives on what it's like to be in the education side of the game development industry and what it is actually like to juggle both. It's going to be a long one, so strap in. Without further ado, here she is.
Hi, my name is Sophie Azlan. I am a lecturer of game development at UOW Malaysia, previously known as KDU University College, and I'm also a developer here based in Malaysia. I'm so excited to be here. I've been formerly part of the games industry since 2020, where I got my start as a project coordinator at Passion Republic and Passion Republic Games. Now I've gone into the education circuit where I'm molding the developers of tomorrow, I suppose.
Okay, all right. Before we get deeper into that, can I just get to know a bit about your gaming history? Like, you know, what are kind of games you like to play?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm an avid rhythm gamer, honestly. I grew up in the arcades, in a sense. There used to be this one arcade back when it was called Tropicana City Mall, right? And they had like all these really old Beatmania cabinets. There was a Para Para machine, which I really loved. One of my friends got me into Dance Dance Revolution, which I wasn't very good at. And then there was another game called Pump It Up, which is kind of like a Korean equivalent, but the arrows are a bit different. Mm. And I was a bit better with that. But then beyond that, in terms of like handheld gaming, I like the action, like whoosh, whoosh, whack, whack kind of games.
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts, big fan of the franchise. I'm also like really into the Persona series, Yakuza. Now it's known as Like a Dragon. I really like RPGs, action games, and rhythm. Yes.
Okay, all right. So you, I guess, hinted a bit at your history just now, but how did you actually get into game development and how did that eventually lead to being in the education industry?
It's so funny. I'm having my full circle moment, actually. When I was about like 15, 16 and I was in secondary school, right? It turns out that the school ICT club, they were in a game competition. It was a national game competition where they had to make a game about, I think, recycling, something about that. And I so badly wanted to be in the club to work on the game, even though I wasn't in the club. So I begged my teacher, like, please let me in the club. I know it's like already past mid-year. I really want to be there at mid-games. And, you know, thank God my teacher really liked me. So she let me join the club. And then we tried to make something. It ended up not really panning out. But one of the guys in the club, his mother was like, I know somebody at KDU at Damansara Jaya who teaches games and can give you a little bit of insight. So my mom, she had like a Camry and she just like piled us all up in her car. We drove to the DJ campus after school one day and then we got to learn about games. And honestly, like when I got there, I was so starry-eyed, but the presentation was, you know, it was a bit dry. I did see myself like kind of zoning out, definitely, speaking very honestly, you know. But then at the end of it, they showed the student projects and something in my brain just clicked with like, this is what I know I want to do. So ever since that point, I knew I wanted to get into games. So the history, the trajectory of getting there is a bit messy. I wasn't able to enter the foundation in arts and tech, which was required to get into KDU's game program at the time. So I had to do a diploma in a different program instead. But I'm so grateful I had the opportunity. My diploma is in entrepreneurship and graphic design. So it further honed my art sense and a little bit of like, you know, that kind of grit that comes with entrepreneurship. And then after that, I was able to enter the degree in game development, after which I graduated. And then I managed to enter the industry formally. So it was really exciting, but it's very full circle because, you know, I entered the industry, I had a little bit of time there, and then I pivoted back into education to see what I can do to help the developers of tomorrow. Mm. And it's at basically the same place that I started with, but now I'm on the other side of the fence.
Mm. What made you want to transition to being in the education industry?
So when I was a student, I was such a big champion for maintaining the bridge between like what a student will know and the people in the industry, what they know, and just trying to communicate information between the two sides. So then when I was in industry, I was noticing like, the students, like, they know things, but they don't know everything. And I was communicating these things through, people who are now my colleagues, very funnily enough, over in the education side. And I realized that I wanted to get in there and do a bit more. So I decided to pivot back into education. and become like a direct access in a sense. So the subjects that I teach, I'm very fortunate, are the ones that are very project-based. So I get to go in there and be like, you know, the industry is like this. You know, in a studio is like this. Fill in your get chart. Fill in your Excel spreadsheets, that kind of thing. So I have the opportunity to do that, which is really exciting. So I get to continue being that bridge. I can tell industry like, hey, you know, the students nowadays, what they're doing is this, this, that. And I can go into the students and I can say like, hey, you know, industry is expecting this, this, that. So you should really beef up in these particular sectors.
Mm. You're a full-time lecturer, but I understand that you're still technically involved in some of games development as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Mind sharing some of them?
So I was recently involved in a game called Over Hours by Control D Studio. They are based out of Sarawak, the team, and also there's some dear friends of mine. That one is like a... it's like a strategy kind of game, and it takes place in like this satire of an office, and it's really exciting. There's going to be some more news coming out from there soon. I got to work on the script a bit. And then also another game is Devadatta, which is a turn-based like character action kind of game where you're trying to put back together a broken internet RPG. Really cool, fun stuff. That one, I'm more of a producer on that, so I'm the one who's yelling at everybody, like, you know, where's the milestone? So, yeah, those are some of the games I've worked on. And the big one, evidently, is Gigabash with Passion Republic. I was a project coordinator for that and the first DLC with Godzilla and some other monsters from Toho. And also I was able to provide a bit of additional narrative support where I was given the privilege of ideating with their narrative designer, Gerald. Really exciting stuff. So, you know, my name's in the credits for a couple of things. You can look it up.
Sounds awesome. So you're working on so many projects simultaneously while also lecturing. Do you find that to a certain extent that the projects that you're working on also inform your day job as a lecturer?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. So there are some students who are pushing to go straight into a AAA studio, or rather like one that focuses on mostly outsource work. Mm. And then there are some that are trying to go straight into indies. They want to work on original IP. They want to work with a smaller team. So because I have a bit of experience working on both sides of that, I can give them at least what is my experience, and also I can convey any information that I learned from my friends and network about those respective sides of industry, you know, especially if they're going to be within the country. If they're aiming to go outside the country, I do have a couple of other people that I can sort of rely on. And if it's possible, I would try to bring them in so the students can ask questions directly. We've had some instances where I'm able to actually bring people in directly to talk to the students. So it does inform the things I do and how I communicate with the students, definitely.
Mm. When you first transitioned from being a developer to an educator, did you face any challenges then?
It's mostly just, you know, I've been that student who's like complaining about the lecturers and complaining about how, like, you know, there's so much paperwork. And now I'm the lecturer on the other side of the fence who's like, I know there's a lot, you know, but it's got to be done. So it's really just revisiting old experiences as a student and putting it on the other side of the fence. But now I've got the insight of what the industry is expecting. So I try to take whatever I've learned and put it into the lessons that I teach and whatever we're trying to push forward as a university. Like if we have any on-campus activities, maybe if there's a way that we can showcase certain elements of the students' work, because it's like, hey, you know, somebody from industry is going to be coming over, or some notable people from even outside of games industry but from tech, they'd be coming over. Maybe we can showcase this, this, that because of XYZ. You know, these are the kind of experiences that inform what I'm able to do.
Mm, what about the other way around? Did the experience as a lecturer somehow or another also influence your project in game development as well? No?
Yeah. I mean, like, that one I think is more of a soft skill thing, but also being a project coordinator, it definitely improved my ability to work with documentation. I am now very fond of the spreadsheet. Beforehand, I was like, oh, I hate spreadsheets. And I'm like, I love spreadsheets. I love conditional formatting. But so that was already one thing. So it definitely helped when I was going back into, you know, lecturing and everything. But then being a lecturer, because I'm dealing with the future developers of tomorrow, I'm dealing with all these young adults, it's definitely taught me to be patient more than anything else, because it's very easy to look at the classes and view them as numbers. One of the classes that I'm teaching, in fact, Games Narrative, this semester is 41 students. It's 41 students, and it's kind of nuts. I have another lecturer who's there with me, but still, it's a lot of people, right? Looking at it just based on numbers, that's already crazy. But then each of those numbers, they're individual, so each one of them has to be treated with care. You have to be attentive. You need to be aware of what are their needs. Is there anything that you can do? Is there any kind of additional opportunities that you can push their way to help them grow as a developer? Because, you know, to you, there's so many of them, but then to them, there's only one of you. So you need to treat everybody with care and respect because these are the experiences that will shape them going into the industry. And I want to be able to leave a positive impact on each of these people. So if there's anything else, it's just patience, definitely.
Do you find it easier to teach because you've had experience in industry? Or do you see any of your current colleagues now that are perhaps struggling because they've never had their industry experience in the first place?
I wouldn't say struggling, but just that we have different experiences. Mm. So some of them have interfaced with industry, and then I'm technically from industry. So sometimes something will come up and I'll be like, you know, as a member of industry, I feel this way, but as an educator, I feel this way. And it's like, how do we find a way to like merge the two? So then sometimes I have to workshop it with my colleagues because their perspective may actually help us to come to a better decision. Mm-hmm. So they're not really struggling, but it's just like there can be differences in opinion and we have to find a way through it and figure out what's the best thing to do for the students.
Mm. Mm. You've mentioned the importance of, I guess, to a certain extent, responding to the industry and being, I guess, staying relevant to the industry as well, one way or another, or keeping up with the industry. But how important is it, especially in your line of, what you teach, how important is the theoretical aspect of things as well when it comes to, I guess, educating the students, you know, getting them to know or having that important foundation before you're able to, I guess, be a bit more agile and dynamic in what you learn and what you eventually grow into?
It's incredibly important, honestly, because there is, in a way, like a perception that, some universities, something that we did talk about before was like they're priming students to be industry ready. But what does industry ready really mean? KDU last time had the slogan of hit the ground running, right? Before it became UNW. So that's something that I always keep in mind in the back of my head. So how do we get the students to hit the ground running? What does that really mean? It's developing that foundation, but at the same time, priming them for critical thought. Because at the end of the day, like what I'm teaching is a degree. And then what they say or what is often said is that the diploma is where you would learn more of the practical skills. But then a degree is where you learn the theoretical skills, right? And then it goes like higher and higher. What's it based on the levels of education that you hit? So you know, especially when it comes to a degree, it is so important for us to have them ready to think for themselves and think outside the box because what they can contribute is more than just labor, right? Within industry, they need to be able to contribute their thoughts, and they need to be able to add to the conversation. They need to be able to listen, take in critiques, and take those critiques and turn it into something else. So, part of, it's not an ad for UOW, I swear, but part of our curriculum is actually we do a lot of project semesters. So we put them in a pseudo-studio environment, and they have to come up with decisions as a team, as individuals, and really think about, with the game that they're trying to make, what would be the best decision moving forward. We as lecturers, we can sort of guide them, but it's ultimately their projects. So, you know, we only do so much, and then we just see how they go, and then based on their progress, then sort of helps inform us on what needs to be done for the next project moving forward, so on and so forth. So having theoretical skills is incredibly important because we want people to be able to have critical thinking skills upon entering industry.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of UOW, you studied game development there and now you're a lecturer there.
Yeah.
What was the syllabi like? What was the syllabi like when you studied there and how has that changed taking into factor your presence there as well?
The syllabus has changed because I'm there. That's basically it. So, UOW, their games program is split into three streams. Mm. So there's the design stream, the game art stream, and the game tech stream. And they do things separately until their project semesters where the students are, they have to work together. They have to work together on a project. And more often than not, it's like, you know, you have like your first semester where you do everything together, you find your footing, then you sort of split up. And then after that, when you come together for a project, it's like, okay, I've spent some time doing my specialization and now it's time for me to show you what I can do in a group. So that's remained the same. In terms of what is immediately different is that there's a couple more opportunities that are available to the students. We actually have an additional class on like game audio. You know, students are able to take classes from another program where they can actually do video editing. So they learn a little bit more beyond just what is perceived to be like game development skills. Because game development is such like a wide open landscape, right? So they are able to learn a little bit more beyond design, tech, art, and see what else is interesting within industry through that, which is really cool. Because like we have had people graduate from the course and outside of these streams, they go into things like they specifically become QA, they specifically become game support through project management as well. There's also those who go into audio design, like straight up audio design, and it's really cool. So it's great that the university is able to have classes that can sort of accommodate people who want to be in those streams now.
Mm. Yeah. But based on your observations, do you think that the university is still keeping up with how fast the game development industry is progressing?
I like to think so, yeah. We still have our connections with industry. We still frequently communicate with different studios. We ask them, what are you using? Is there anything that we can also teach our students? Or then if we have students who go out for internships, during the site visit, we actually will ask the supervisors, is there anything that we on our site can improve within our course based on your experience with the student? So we have had instances where it's let's say a design student goes out to a studio and they do their internship. So we ask them, what can we do to improve? Then the studio will say something we are interested in having interns in the future that are more interested in these particular fields. So then, that's something that we as lecturers will keep in mind so that when the students are looking for internships, then we can recommend them to go to specific places because it's a possibility for the studio to grow and also for the student to grow as well. Mm. Yeah. So we still have a finger on the pulse, definitely.
All right. Yeah. But are there any gaps still that you have observed perhaps that have not yet been fulfilled or met by the university yet?
I think there's always going to be gaps just because the industry as itself, it's a technology, it's an art, and it's a business. It's going to be changing all the time. We have so many major players who are here, and we know that there's going to be more major players to come. Every year it just seems like there's more innovation that is to be had within the games industry or within tech in general, and how do we accommodate that? We have to figure it out, basically. So there's always going to be gaps, and we can only do what we can to sort of prepare our students as much as possible before they get out there.
There was Sophie Azlan, a lecturer at the School of Computing and Creative Media, UOW Malaysia, sharing her insights on the education side of the game development industry. We're going to make way for some messages. More after this. Stay tuned. This is Gigi Well Played on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Gigi Well Played. I'm your host, Hanif Baharuddin. Joining me on the show today is Sophie Azlan. She wears many different hats, but she is speaking to us today in her capacity as a lecturer at the School of Computing and Creative Media, UOW Malaysia, as we're discussing what it's like to teach game development. Speaking of game development, she's going to continue our chat by breaking down what it is, the 101 of it all. Of course, it starts with an idea, but what's next?
I mean, you're right there. It starts with an idea, then it's a discussion on how the idea will take form and then how feasible the idea's form is going to be. So, let's use an example, right? Super Mario Brothers, it's a side-scrolling 2D platformer pixel art game. So in terms of feasibility, what is it? Mechanically, that it uses a limited set of buttons. So that if you're going to be developing for a specific hardware, it doesn't need to be hardware that has so many buttons because you really just need the two and then the directional D-pad, right? So that's one thing. Character-wise, we already have this idea of a plumber. Okay, cool. He's got a mustache. He's got a hat. He's very, we recognize him from that. And then we have this idea of the world and what it's going to be. Pixel art. Okay, pixel art. Some people say that's very simple. Some people say that that's a trap. Some people say that actually because it's so simple, you need to have a lot of thought and care put into it to make sure that the complexities can be seen through that. So then maybe you can have less artists on board because of the pixel art. You don't need the same kind of manpower that you'd need for, say, a 3D game. And then, side-scrolling, 2D, you don't need a 3D engine. Then you look into your resources and you look into what the team that you have, what they're able to do. If it's not what they're able to do, it's what can they learn quickly enough? So I'd say that when you're making the game, it starts from the idea and then it's a measure of can you do it or can you learn to do it? And then also establishing how long will that take? It's very easy to come up with the ideas, right? So there's a lot of people who come into the industry. We do have some students and someone who are I want to be the next Miyamoto. And then they don't know how to follow that up. So it's our job as a lecturer to teach them to be the next Miyamoto, you've got to figure out a lot of other things. Design is about the planning period, right? And it's really difficult, especially I know I'm going off topic a little bit, but game design is really difficult because it starts with you and it ends with you. And you have to see it through from A to Z. It's easier for you to gauge how good art is because you look at it and then you're is it good or not for what you're trying to do? Tech, does it work or not? But then for design, it's like you have to see the whole thing through first, or at least the whole mechanic, you have to see it work out first before you can judge if this is really good design or bad design. Because first it's like, is it functional? And then is it fun? Functionality is black and white. Fun is subjective, which makes it really hard. And then that's where like that critical thinking and theory comes in. Because then it's like, you're thinking critically about fun. And then like, okay, maybe you're like, oh, it's fun to specific audiences. Then you have to ask yourself, do you really want to cater to only a specific audience? Or do you want to cater to like mainstream? But then they say, if you cater to everyone, you cater to no one. Is that all right with you? You have to see if it sits right with your spirit. And it just goes on and on and on and on. That's game design. It's hard. So it's about, can it be done? Can you do it? And then it starts with the idea, yeah.
Wow, it doesn't sound easy at all.
It's not, because it's like, again, it's a technology, it's an art, it's a business. I consider games to be an art form, ultimately. It's playable media that leaves impact on people. Mm. I mean, you know, say what you want about Flappy Bird, but everybody remembers, like, it creates emotions out of you. It creates memories, it creates feelings. You know, and then, it's this little bird on your phone that's going, wah, 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 wah. But that's still some kind of artistic credit to it, right? Yeah. So same can be said for other big games like the Nier series, or even locally, you know, we have things like No Straight Roads, we have Eximus, you know, Gigabash, shameless plug. We've got anything that's coming out of Kaigan, like, you know, they're starting work on Null Space, which is this amazing like space exploration thing. It's such a cool space to be in, and I love it so dearly, but it's so difficult.
Yeah. You mentioned a good example just now of new students coming to the course and wanting to just be the next Miyamoto, the next Kojima, whoever, right? Whoever they look up to, right? So how do you go about, I guess, directing them to the right path, as well to a certain extent, letting them know the realities of things? Because I think based on what you've just described there, it doesn't sound that easy either,
it's
right?
Like,
Yeah. So how do you go about, I guess, telling them the realities of life as a, you know, video game developer?
Yeah, it's hard. Now I have to dish up life lessons. I'm not just like a person behind the screen anymore. I'm like there being like, kid, life hard. Yeah. I mean, first things first, we tell them don't get into game industry for the money. It's a ruthless industry no matter where you go. So, you know, nothing in life is guaranteed. Can you make money in the games industry? Yes. But are you guaranteed to make a lot of money? No. So that's immediately one thing that we have to sort of set straight. No matter what your role is, it's going to be difficult. So you've got to be aware of that. And then, okay, let's say we've got somebody who comes in and is like, oh, it'll be the next Kojima because I love Death Stranding. Okay. You break down what exactly is it about the game or the person that they're trying to emulate. What exactly is it that they like? And you really get down to the core of it. So let's say if it's somebody who really likes Kojima. More often than not, there's somebody who really loves this kind of, what is it, like auteur kind of filmmaking feeling. So it's like, okay, you really like that. Does that mean that you're more interested in film? Does that mean that this is the right program for you? It's something that they have to ask themselves. Because sometimes what happens is the students will sit through that first semester and realize the harsh reality of the game industry, and then they'll realize it's not for them. It happens more often than you think, you know. It's kind of like, oof, you know. Some of them just, they realize they're not cut out for it, or they need a bit more time to cook before they can come back, that kind of thing. So, you know, is it right for them? And then, okay, fine, games is right for you. So what can you do to be more like that guy? Okay, Kojima has obviously an artistic eye. He's very into film. He's very into these kinds of layered storytelling. So then it's like, all right, that means you're into narrative. So what can you do to become a better narrative designer? And then they do the searching and they look into what else they can learn from there. And then suddenly they come back to you with like stacks of books by like Kafka. And you're like, okay, I guess you're on the right track. You know? Yeah.
All right. That's interesting. Okay. I mean, I have to admit, once upon a time, I did have the, I guess, dream of wanting to be, you know, to be in the games industry. You know? And I guess, you know, because of a lack of direction at that time, I decided to like, oh, okay, maybe I should be a programmer of sorts. And hence, I studied computer science and, you know, it didn't work out because I didn't have the, I guess, patience for it, I suppose, and also the interest, essentially, right? So, I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of people like to play video games and, you know, when they have that I guess, interest, or they have that as a form of hobby, I suppose they feel like, oh, okay, I want to work in the game industry. And then, you know, they perhaps, you know, enroll in the course and they found out that, okay, perhaps it's not really for them, right? So do you feel like, especially now, the industry is quote unquote ready to, I guess, accept people like this and perhaps point them in the right direction? But apart from that, you know, there's also these realities that I think a lot of people have to accept that just because you play video games doesn't mean that the industry is for you as well, right? So,
yeah,
so yeah, how do you, I guess, navigate and juggle that, I suppose?
Well, if they're interested in the industry, if they're interested in games, right? So games, we start from games. If they're interested in games is just playing games, then you can ask them like, well, then are you interested in content creation? Because now streaming is such a big thing. I mean, the VTube industry is massive, or just generally being a game streamer. If that's something that you're really dedicated to, you'd like playing in order to get a response, then, you know, that's something that we can question them if this is something that you're interested in. Or if they're interested in playing competitively, then, you know, esports, you know, we have like an esports stadium. So there is definitely a space for them. We have several teams that come out of Malaysia. You know, we have all women's teams. We have teams for dedicated games. You know, Mobile Legends, Bang Bang, huge here, right? So that's another thing that they can look into. Or maybe they're interested in game development, but only in a very specific niche way. Then it's also a question of like, then do you want this to be a job or do you want this to just continue being a hobby? So that's another discussion to be had. I mean, I had a very similar one when I was younger. I remember I was really into like anime conventions growing up. My mother can testify because she like paid for a lot of the merchandise that I was printing at the time for the booths and stuff, right? So a lot of my friends after school, they ended up enrolling in art universities. And my mom and I had a very frank conversation like, do you want to enroll in an art university as well? Because she would support me, but it's got to be something that I want to do, like alcohol, right? And I remember telling her that I love art, but I don't want to grow to dislike it because it's my job. So I decided against it. So I'm sure that there are kids out there nowadays who maybe they really like game development, they like to dabble in it, but the idea of turning it into their career, you know, it may not be the best path for them. So they can still continue to learn about game development. They can still continue to love it. But there are many avenues on which you can learn things nowadays. It's not just the institutions. You know, universities, at the end of the day, you will not learn everything there. And universities will shape you into becoming a better whatever you want to be. But a lot of it comes from yourself first, right? They can only give as much as you can as well. So there are other opportunities and other ways that they can also break into the games industry beyond just learning it in a traditional sense. Mm. That being said, though, like learning in a traditional sense and having that structure, it does help for a lot of people, myself included. I knew I needed that structure. So that's why I pushed myself to enter it this way, basically.
Mm. Yeah, especially now, right?
Mm, especially now. I mean, I have like a younger brother who's like really into games at the moment. He's doing Scratch. So that's his way of pivoting to the games industry. He's like 7 this year. So, you know, the kids today, they're getting interested early. They're getting interested young. But at the same time, there's no guarantee that this is going to be like a job for them. It could always just be a hobby. Maybe it's even a hobby that they can monetize, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be their career.
Yeah. Just to flip the conversation a bit, I mean, and because you've been in industry as well, do you have colleagues, I mean, in the game development industry that treat it as a job?
Definitely. Like, you know, not everybody is like, so, you know, I come in there and I'm like, boom, I slam open the doors and I'm like, you guys, I really love game development. That's me, right? I have friends who are not like that. For them, it's like, it's a job. You know, they clock in, they, you know, model something, concept art something, they're like, you know, the clock out and like, I want to go home. What are you going to do at home? I'm going to play Apex. That's it. You know, so it's for some people, it's still like a job. It's still like a business, still an industry. Not everybody's going to be like insanely passionate about it. So, and that's okay. Like, not everybody has to be so insanely passionate about it. You know, they don't hate their jobs, but it's still like, it's a job. And power to them for that. Yeah.
Mm. Do you think that the industry, from either from the education side or even the game development side, is driven by passion? Like, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people from different industries, so I feel like, you know, all industries have passionate people. But when it comes to video game development and the video game industry, it feels like it requires a specific kind of passion as well. Like, you must be very into it to be able to, I guess, be a part of it, right? So based on your, I mean, experience being a part of both now, do you feel like it's filled with people who are just, you know, driven with passion, or like, do you have pragmatic people out there as well?
A bit of both, definitely. Mm. Especially it's because, like, I'm sure we definitely have like a large number of passionate people. You look at the number of indie studios that are coming up, right? So definitely those are people who are in it because like they feel so strongly about the games industry. But then we do have a couple more people who are more pragmatic, who are keeping things sort of like afloat, I suppose. It's still a business, so they've got to be level-headed. It's not leaning any which way, and I don't think it ever will be, because we need both sides, end of the day, right? Because someone's got to make sure that the passionate people stay on budget. And then the people who keep the passionate people on budget, they need to be aware of, like, this is still an industry where we're creating something that people find joy in. So we need to maintain that. It's got to be fun. It's still a game at the end of the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's never really going to swing like any which way, I think. We need both sides to maintain this kind of, I guess, growth, the steady growth. Yeah.
Mm. Now, let's reflect on the industry a bit. For better or worse, as exciting as the industry is, it is also grappling with issues of its own, from, you know, burnout to crunch to now more recently layoffs as well, right?
Yeah.
So how do you actually navigate these issues with your students?
Okay, well, I mean, the students, I have gotten like the messages of like, you know, miss, I'm terrified about entering the industry. I remember I read like a post online where somebody described the games industry as this amazing party, and just as they've entered, somebody's turned off the lights and turned off the music. And I think that's definitely one way to describe it. You know, we are currently being racked by global layoffs. Everyone's affected. And it's a matter of riding out the storm at the moment, I think, because the majority of the layoffs I believe that we've seen are based in North America, but it's impossible to not feel the effects of it no matter where we go, just because everyone is just so insanely connected. So in terms of the students, I have to tell them that the industry changes very quickly. There's nothing that says that it won't change by the time you graduate. You know, they're worrying about this as like a year one, year two student. So they've got some time to go before they complete a 3-year course. And then the ones who are about to get out there, it's like, you know, there's still plenty of opportunities here that you can try out. And also, they are very talented in multiple ways. So if they have to pivot out of the industry for a short period of time and come back to it, they are ready. They have the skills. They are equipped to do so, to do what they need to do, basically. But, you know, everything is sort of like a cycle. So I'm pretty sure that we are going to have like a new period of growth when all of this subsides.
But does this indirectly make you, I guess, worry about the sustainability and the future of the profession as well, to a certain extent?
I think there's always going to be a need for games, because it's like it's a form of entertainment, right? Like it's something that's just so globally beloved. So in terms of sustainability of the industry, what we can do, I suppose, is strengthen things locally, make sure that we're not entirely dependent on foreign sources, and try to do what we can here. And also, if there's any opportunities for us to strengthen ties across the Southeast Asian nation, you know, Southeast Asians, we love to share and communicate ideas and all of that. I think that's fantastic. If we can continue to do that, that'd be great. Whatever we can learn from our overseas partners in the Western world, we continue to do that, that'd be great. It's really all that we can do at the moment, I think. In terms of sustainability, it's just going to be a bit rough for a bit, just because we don't know the extent of how these layoffs are going to continue to go around. All we can do is prepare.
Yeah. Layoff is one thing, but what about the other issues, you know, plaguing the industry? I mean, the older ones, but I think to a certain extent still more relevant, something like, you know, burnout and crunch.
You know?
Is that something that you guys talk about as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We have students who sometimes they will even start experiencing burnout during university itself, because especially in that simulated studio environment, we have so many students who are like, they're genuinely putting their all into a project. So, you know, if it's a 14-week kind of class, then sometimes by like week 6, you know, we can see the students are starting to dwindle, right? So what we do is we try to encourage them to take breaks. We encourage them to create schedules and really stick to it, to try not to overextend. You know, as lecturers, we are also trying our best look out for their health, and we're trying to tell them, like, you know, taking breaks, taking rest is part of the process. You need to be aware of your own body's limitations, and you also need to communicate these things to your teammates. That's just what it means to be a good member of the team. You're trying your best to communicate and also trying your best to be heard, and everybody else has to hear you up. So we are trying our best to prepare the students for, in a sense, like the studio environment, by also trying to get them to overcome burnout now, so that when they're in the studio itself, there's less chances of them getting to that point of burnout, hopefully. You know, we can try our best from the education side. We are aware, though, definitely, that this is a relatively common thing.
Yeah. What about crunch? You know, something that I guess to a certain extent, I know it's something that the industry is trying to tackle as well, but it's also, you know, one way or another, the reality. I mean, I don't know if it's fair to say that, but that, I mean, obviously chasing deadlines is one thing, and it applies across a lot of industries as well, right? To be fair, but yeah, is that something that inevitably you have to also be slightly realistic, quote unquote, with your students, I suppose?
Well, you know, we tell them that we discourage it, and we try to prevent it as much as we can from our side. So sometimes, you know, students get so excited about what they're working on that they find themselves crunching without realizing it. You know, they're like working on things to the last minute. So, you know, we do try to sort of reel them in and tell them, try not to do that. Please don't do that anymore. You know, and sometimes they follow that advice and sometimes they still don't. So then we have to keep reminding them. And hopefully that lesson stays with them even past graduation. But we are aware, and the students are also aware, and we're trying to discourage crunch as much as possible with them.
Going back to layoffs, it's something that I think the industry is still grappling with. What are your thoughts on it? You know, based on your own observation, you know, why are we, I guess, facing this problem at the moment?
So my big grand opinion is that a lot of the layoffs right now are likely in part due to COVID. So, you know, some people are saying that during the rise of the pandemic, a lot of people were hiring remote workers, especially because they felt like, okay, this is an opportunity for us to like take in a lot of people. And there was a large boom in entertainment because everybody was at home. So it was like, we got to crank up more games and blah, 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 like that. And then now, like, the term I've seen thrown around is that they are right-sizing. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are being laid off for allegedly reasons related to that. So a lot of companies that are doing the layoffs have stated like different reasons as to why. But I do think that unfortunately the pandemic has had a large part into putting us in the position that we are now.
So essentially the market is self-correcting itself.
I guess you could say that, yeah. So I hope that everybody affected by the layoffs, you know, they manage to find new places of work, especially ones are sustainable and also ones that are able to cater to their needs, especially because it is our understanding, some of my colleagues and I, we have talked about it, that there are some studios where they are discouraging people from working remotely. They want people to be back in the office, and you know, that may be playing a part, but everything can also be driven back to like the pandemic and how it's affected people. So it's a rough time for everybody, basically.
What about the theory that you know, the type of games that we have right now, whether it's, you know, live service games or even AAA blockbuster games as well, you know, essentially affecting this problem, you know, considering that, you know, one way or another, budgets for games, you know, development are getting bigger and bigger. So and essentially that's also a problem. What do you think of that?
I mean, I love indie games more than anything else. So if there's ever any opportunities that these larger studios can give funding to like these smaller, stranger games, I would say to go for it. I hope that we start to really showcase more indie works in the future. Yeah. Can't really say much about like the budgets because, you know, different studios will have different priorities ultimately. But if there is any time to definitely put money towards funding more interesting indies, like now would be a great time to do that. That's what I think.
What are some of the essential skills someone looking to get into the industry needs? Especially for listeners out there, you know, who are thinking about, you know, I guess they're enrolling to be a student, you know, to learn game development and things like that. You know, what are some of the skills that they need to perhaps have in order to be successful in the industry, I suppose?
Well, one thing is that success is subjective to many people, right? Some people may say that success is just being able to land a job, regardless of what the job is, because it's just so cutthroat. Some people may put success as being able to land a job at specific companies or being to be in a specific position or reaching financial milestones. In terms of like getting into industry beyond just technical skills, because there's just so many roles out there, soft skills-wise, I think communication really is key. You need to be able to communicate not only within your team, but also effectively communicate whatever ideas that you may have. You know, ultimately, we're making things and we're trying to make other people understand what we're trying to make, right? And if other people can't understand that, then it just shows that our communication skills or anything, they're just not as effective. So communication skills, one, being able to listen, two, because everyone's going to have opinions, everyone's going to have feedback, right? And then you've also got to have the ability to sort of collate all that feedback and try to weed out what you feel maybe isn't the best for the current project and figure out what may be more beneficial to either your development or like what the game, what the project is trying to be. And also standard stuff, teamwork, determination, grit, kindness, honestly, because it's such a cutthroat industry sometimes. Having understanding of other people, having like a willingness to openly participate in conversations and get things going, get things moving. These are things I feel are just so essential to making something, especially if it's something that's meant to like bring joy to others. In terms of what a student nowadays or a newcomer to the industry could do for these soft skills, it's just like, I would encourage you to go out and like meet actual game developers. There's so many out there nowadays, especially because not just UOW, but there's so many institutions that are coming up with like games or games adjacent programs. You know, recently there was like, I think there was like an MOU that was signed off between UM and Exola, which is really interesting. And then like Unimai even started up like a Bachelor's of Game Technology kind of program. So, you know, there's so many people who are aspiring game devs and there are people who are like, in the industry. So just like talk to these people, see what are their needs, see what kind of people they are. You know, we're all just like regular people. No, we're not just, you know, the stereotype of a game dev is like the guy in the basement, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we're not like that anymore. Now they look like me. Now they sound like me. Now they are like other types of people. Gamers are not just, you know, teenage boys. Gamers are even people like my mom. You know, she really loves Design Home on her phone, that kind of thing. She's a gamer too. What are you talking about, right? Even like, what's it? My Aya, he likes to play chess. What? Chess online? Ah, he's playing esports lah. It's chess. It's chess online. You know, you got to get to know people. You got to know what are their wants and needs. And then from there, you can see, like, is this somebody that I would like to be? What can I learn from there? But really, like, it's about being determined and being able to communicate and being kind.
All right. Okay, so the local gaming industry is currently booming with a lot of exciting releases and projects coming. I'm sure based on your experience, this wasn't really a surprise, right? But what else can we expect from the industry moving forward?
I think that we are going to continue to have like a lot of interesting indies come out. It's just a matter of if these indies are going to be visible to us. Like we are having like more local games are starting, or I guess like, speaking of Southeast Asia, not just Malaysia, because you know we have such close ties around like Southeast Asia, right? They're really starting to get out there. I mean, did you see what one of the games by Toki Productions from Indonesia was actually nominated at the Game Awards last year, which is nuts, right?
Space for the Unbound.
Yes, exactly. You know, I was like, oh, Space for the Unbound sweep. You know, like kudos to the winners, but also it's like, ah, I really wanted that. I think that there's gonna be more local games that are going to be focused on telling not necessarily like culturally based stories, but just games coming out of here in like a massive volume. So we've got to see if these are games that are going to reach a point where even like the regular consumer is aware of them or not. Like the industry's not going to be like too saturated or anything. Like we're not at that point yet, definitely. But it's just that there's so many and a lot of these games don't have the resources to become known. So maybe we might see more opportunities for these games to become like well-known at events or more opportunities for them to receive support and then even the regular consumer may become aware of them. Because it's like, if you look online, a lot of people, they aren't aware of what our industry is. They feel that it's a lot of outsource work. They feel that the local games industry is predominantly just that, not realizing the sheer amount of like local IP that's coming out. Like not just the culturally based stuff, but also like the more these niche genre games and things like that. Like one of the games that's definitely on my list, anything by Cellar Vault Games. They did Short Creepy Tales, and then now they have like this upcoming one. It's got like this like paper doll style. It's really cool. And then again, like Null Space is another one to look at. And there's also been like, I know that I'm really interested to see Kue by like Twilight Foundry. It's like, you know, this little restaurant simulation game, that kind of thing. But people don't know these things. I'm pretty sure a lot of your listeners are only going to be aware of these kinds of games after I've said them. So there needs to be more opportunities for these games to become well-known within, outside of the industry bubble, basically. The average consumer needs to know more about these things. We may see more opportunities for that in the future, hopefully.
I know just now you said that, I know we've not reached a point where it has become oversaturated yet, but to some extent, the indie space is becoming slightly crowded there.
It's crowded,
yeah. And I understand that it's a question of, I guess, funding that, that's preventing, I guess, perhaps, you know, a lot more of Gigabash, you know, coming out, right? But what else can the industry do to at least, you know, for better or worse, you know, having a fair share of your indie games, but at the same time, having a few more of your Gigabashes out there, if you know what I mean?
It's a matter of funding and opportunity. Like, I know any arts industry is going to be the same thing. Like, you know, we need more funding opportunities to get, like, the niche stuff out there. We definitely need that kind of thing. I always think about, there was a story that was told to me of, like, you know, MDEC had, like, event, not like a Jom Hewo, but they had like some event that I think was in East Malaysia, and they had Gigabash shown there back when I was still working at Passion. And you know, there were some people who had never heard of the game, and they saw it and they played it and they fell in love with it. And then when the game itself came out for release, they bought it like day one. So we need more opportunities for the indies to get out there so people can have a chance to fall in love with our own stuff. You know, yes, Call of Duty is great. You know, we love the bang, bang, shoot, shoot. But then we've got bang, bang, shoot, shoot at home too. You know, we've got them on mobile. We've got them on console. We've got them on PC. Just people don't know about them. And then the thing is, like, we shouldn't be supporting these things just on the basis that they're Malaysian. Like, that's, you know, that's not the way to go about things. We need to ensure that good work comes out, right? So that's one thing. But we need to give these people a space to see the local stuff in the first place. A lot of people weren't even aware about No Straight Roads until they had like a physical release on the Switch, right? And then they saw it in the stores, and then they turned it around and they saw, like, you know, the coat of arms was on it because they had received local funding, right? So it's like, oh, new both of these shoes. It makes people like go nuts. So we gotta have more spaces, more funding opportunities for the indies so that they can actually show off here and we can exit this niche bubble and break into the mainstream. Mm. It's definitely what we can do.
All right. Okay, so you've name-dropped some games just now.
Yeah.
But do you have any other recommendations of local games, especially for those who are aspiring to get into the industry to look at? You know?
Yeah. I mean, anything by 7th Beat Games. You know, as of the time of this, I think that the 7th Beat, the main guy, Hafiz, he just won a GDC-related award, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm so sorry, Hafiz. But 7th Beat, they do, like, rhythm games. So Rhythm Doctor is the big one. And it's made by a very small team. Majority of them are, like, you know, remote. But the main guy is, like, here. He's local. And that's definitely one that you can look at. Kaigen Games, their narrative stuff, they do the Simulacra series. They also got a chance to work with, you know, some major industry players. They did like a Doctor Who game a couple years ago as well. And then Null Space, they're doing that space strategy thing, right? Which is super cool. In terms of other ones, let's see, XMS is like a shooty-shooty game, which is really neat. Anything by Cellar Vault, because they do very unique local storytelling kind of games. They had this game called The Plight, okay? Quick side tangent. They had this game called The Plight, which scared me to bits because they have, like, it was a first-person horror game and it took place inside a house. When you look at it, it's like, you know, this kind of like local house, and it has this one like round marble top table. It's like a wooden table with a marble like countertop kind of thing, and I think I have the same house in my the same table in my grandmother's house. So I couldn't play the game because it hit too close to home. But they do a lot of things that are so interesting with their storytelling that it's unique to, especially like the Chinese-Malaysian experience, which I think is really cool. I know that Todak Studios is also working on more games. They did like announce some things last year, which was really interesting. Also, like, look at the student works, because the student works are definitely doing some really interesting things. Like this semester alone, the games that I'm overseeing, there's one about like a sentient paper doll running around like a Malaysian classroom in the 2000s. There's another one which is like inspired by Lies of P, and then you have like a big sword and it, you know, you run on steam and it's really cool. Like, fiong, fiong. There's even like some games have even come out already by the students. There was one like you play as a flower-based spellcaster, and you know, you're trying to purge the evil from like the bodies of like your village people, that kind of thing. You know, the students are coming out some really interesting stuff, and they're going to be the developers of tomorrow. So it's so exciting to see like what they're going to do next. And also, more often than not, these games are free, so you can also check those out. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a good place for you to scour these games would be, what's that website?
Itch.io?
Itch.io, right?
Yeah. So, okay, I've catalogued all the UOW-made games, which is insane because it's like 200 over games, onto our own Itch.io page, UOWM Games. That's UOWMGames.itch.io, where you can download these games for free. A lot of streamers, they really like going through the catalogue and then being like, ooh, look, we're supporting a local university, which is really neat. And then not only that, a couple of other universities like internationally have also done similar. I know that Venus Games from Indonesia, they've also done something similar. In terms of local local games hitting Steam. We don't have that many local games on Steam itself, but some really notable ones, anything made by Nerduk. Nerduk is another developer from East Malaysia. His stuff is also on Steam. And, you know, he's like a solo dev. He's been in the game for like a decade or something, which is nuts. You can find those online as well. Easiest thing, though, it's like, go on Facebook. For some reason, the local game devs here really love getting their stuff out on Facebook. You could probably find some news about local game devs and what they're making on like Facebook groups and stuff. Yeah.
All right. And on that note, thank you so much, Sophie.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're tuned in to GG Well Played, and that was Sophie Azlan, lecturer at the School of Computing and Creative Media, UOW Malaysia, sharing her knowledge on game development and the education side of the industry. If you'd like to listen to this episode again, look for the podcast on bfm.my. You can also download our app, available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. GG Well Played's podcast can also be found on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Do share your thoughts and the games that you play via our email, ggwp@bfm.my. Don't forget to also follow the station on X at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharudin. Thanks for joining us. Game on, and please take care. Hope you're still enjoying Raya. This has been GG Well Played.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.